This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. You better stop. Hey,
they were maybe negotiating informally, but there's no deal yet.
Well, again, I think the president is going to strike the best deal possible. He's been very clear that he wants, that he has a big heart. He understands the magnitude of this problem when it comes to immigration, but he also has made the wall a huge priority. So like it or not, I don't see how you get a deal done that doesn't include the wall, because that's been a major priority of this president. So he's going to get the best deal he can. He's going to negotiate. That's what he's always done. And I think at the end of the day, he's going to make sure that his priorities are part of any deal that gets made.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You have conservatives that are up in arms about this, Sean, but a lot of them praise the Ronald Reagan era and those times and what he was able to get done. You think about comprehensive tax reform. The last time that happened was under Reagan. How did he do that? I mean, he worked with Tip O'Neill. You got to cross the aisle to get big things done. I mean, how often we forget that when we talk about politics today?
That's absolutely right. At the end of the day, look, he campaigned as a businessman that knew how to get a good deal, and I think that's how he's going to govern.
Sean, a couple of things. Bring us through the process of how this goes, because it seems as though the communication war was won by Schumer and Pelosi, who showed savvy getting the word out on how the meeting went first. How important is it for the White House communication team to be the first out with to characterize the meeting, or dare I say, a joint statement? Because it went from a positive reaching across the aisle to the president having to diffuse something throughout the day.
Well, again, I would worry less about what the first statement is out of the gate than the end result. And I think that what you're seeing is Democrats brought into the process. They bought in to the president's agenda and goals. And I think when you see what the final product is, I guarantee you it's going to be on Donald Trump's terms.
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, what Sean Spicer is saying here isn't exactly right. And, you know, yes, this is what happens, the nature of politics. And the beltway is that, you know, they can't get there fast enough, Scott, to the microphones and to tell their side of the story. I mean, and they're going to put every spin they can because they're trying to seal up their base. It's kind of like the Peña Nieto deal with the Mexicans. And, you know, Trump said, hey, it was a good meeting. And then all of a sudden Peña Nieto had to cover himself because he didn't want to feel like he was selling himself out and being conciliatory towards Donald Trump. And especially here's the Democrats, and they're missing a big point here, and that is that I think the country was pleased to see Donald Trump reach across the aisle and bring Nancy Pelosi and Schumer in hopes that maybe we could, on the positive side, get this country moving again and deal with an issue that you know, President Obama did not do us any favors on, as was written in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, that referred to President Obama as being quite cruel. And we've been, you know, pretty definitive on that as well, is that he did us no favors. He's left landmines all over this government. Thank you very much. After all the money that we paid him as president and the money that we continue to pay him as the former president, you know, thank you very much for what you did to this country. You did us no favors. So here we are dealing with the DACA issue. And I believe that, as I said before, I maintain to keep some calm on this. Even Geraldo Rivera gets a little bit emotional, but he always does, you know, about some of these things. And, you know, thinks that Donald Trump is not considering, and this is something we've talked about repeatedly here, is that you've got to think about the people themselves, about, you know, what's happening at the border, how people are coming in and being abused and turning in and being conscripted into sex slavery and drug running and that sort of thing. So all this is all part of law and order. This is what Main Street America has been crying out for. And this is what we're demanding of our government. And so I hope that what Sean Spicer is saying is correct, that Donald Trump will be able to hold his ground. I have a lot more confidence in Donald Trump than I do, frankly, the Republican leadership, because heretofore McConnell and Paul Ryan, I believe, have been a little bit weak. They forgot that, that we won the election. Go figure. This is Bill Martinez. We're live. Stay with us.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. I am Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. All the information that you need to know is right there. Edward Fazer joins us now. It's good to have him back. Last time we talked, we talked about, I believe, one of the most definitive books in recent time on a Catholic defense of capital punishment, By Man Shall His Blood Be Shed. And, of course, Ed being who he is, it's not like he decides to take on any other like topics. I mean, let's go after and let's address five proofs of the existence of God. Edward Fazer, good to have you back with us on Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
It's great to be back. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me back.
Well, congratulations on the book. A topic like this, five proofs of the existence of God, that has been the question in memoriam with humanity. Does God exist?
That's right. It's a classic question, and it's a question that philosophers have historically all thought not only could be answered by reason, that is to say that it's a question that we can investigate through the natural powers of human reasoning, and we don't necessarily have to rely on faith or on divine revelation or on scripture, what have you. But the greatest thinkers in the history of philosophy, from the ancients up through the Middle Ages, through modern philosophy, have all taken the view that the existence of God is something that could be rationally demonstrated. So the word proof in the title of my book is, while it certainly does sound ambitious, I'm merely reflecting in giving my book that title, the view that was taken by thinkers like Plato and Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas and Leibniz and St. Augustine and many others.
Well, when you use the word proof, as you say, that's a caution sign for many who have seemed to accept over the years that you really can't prove the existence of God. But yet, as you say, here's five philosophers who, were able to, break through. And this is one of the things that I deal with, today is seeking a voice that can break through the cultural norms, whether it has to do with climate change, faith in God, other issues, spiritual issues that come up from time to time. And what happens is you get the camp that says, okay, well, I believe because I have faith. And you don't, and we'll just agree to disagree, which, of course, I hate that. I hate that line, agree to disagree, because I think that, we can come back and discuss it, discuss it later. But proof is, during these times of the flaw, even when they first brought it up, they were challenged, in terms of how do you prove the existence of God? Now, we look at the results. I see this the sun coming up every day, the moon, the stars in the sky. I see birds being fed. I look at the grass. I mean, I'm amazed, and I see the presence of God, you know, surrounding me. And to me, take any one of those things, and that's proof to me.
Yeah, I would say that one of the reasons why you have this skepticism in contemporary intellectual life among philosophers and scientists about whether God's existence can be proved is because so many skeptics and atheists are aiming their fire, they're aiming their criticisms at what are really actually very crude caricatures of the traditional arguments for God's existence. They attack things that the philosophers of the past, like Leibniz or Thomas Aquinas or Aristotle, never even really said in the first place. And I'll just give you one example, and this is something I say a lot about in the book. But it's often claimed, what these guys are doing when they argue for God's existence is they're giving an argument like this. Everything has a cause, so the universe has a cause, namely God. And then they think, we can torpedo that argument really quickly, because if everything has a cause, then we can ask, what caused God? And if you say, well, nothing caused God, then maybe nothing caused the universe either. So, we've just refuted the argument with an objection that an 8-year-old could have come up with.
Right.
The problem with that very common objection that atheists raise, though, is that it's directed at an argument that no philosopher ever gave. Mm-hmm. If you look at Plato, Aristotle, Leibniz, Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, you'll find none of them ever give this argument, everything has a cause, the universe has a cause. In fact, most of them would deny the idea that everything has a cause. They're not starting from that assumption. They're starting instead from the premise that, for example, what comes into existence needs a cause,
mm-hmm.
or what exists but is capable of non-existence has a cause. That's very different from saying everything has a cause. It's as different as saying, you know, if I say triangles have three sides, I'm not saying every geometrical figure has three sides. So
exactly.
If I say triangles have three sides and the critic says, well, you just said everything has three sides, but what about squares and circles? The answer is, I never said that.
Right.
And neither did these thinkers like Thomas Aquinas ever say that, quote, everything has a cause. So it's a straw man. They're attacking an argument that was never even given.
Yeah. And again, what's the motivation, Edward? You know, for them to hold their ground. I mean, we get back to, you know, whether it's the atheists or whoever, you go back to that age old issue of if God doesn't exist, I can do as I darn well please.
That's absolutely right. And atheists often like to accuse religious believers of wishful thinking. They say, well, you only really want to believe in God's existence, or you want to give an argument for God's existence because you're trying to uphold some moral point of view that you think belief in God supports, or you're afraid of death and you're craving an afterlife or something. But if you're going to play that sort of ad hominem game, attacking the person rather than the argument the person is giving, it could easily go in the opposite direction as you're indicating. There are obvious reasons why someone would not want to believe in God if they fear that God might be a moral lawgiver who might reward or punish us for what we do here and now. And the fact that at least some atheists, I'm not going to say all, but at least some atheists, especially the kind known as new atheists, this kind of obnoxious movement, this radical, rabid anti-religious movement, the fact that many of them are motivated by emotion and wishful thinking rather than rationality is clear from the fact that, as I know from experience, because I've been debating these guys for almost 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
very often they never want to actually discuss the arguments for God's existence. They would rather devote energy to explain to you why they shouldn't even have to listen to your arguments, why
mm-hmm.
they're too stupid to even be worth taking seriously. And when you say, well, no, if you actually look at the arguments and consider them, you'll see that's not true. But they never want to get to that. They always want mm-hmm. to keep it at this level of trying to find a justification for not even engaging the issue.
Yeah. They don't want to consider the empirical evidence. I mean, let's just talk about the lives, you know, anecdotally. You know, the lives of people that are very well documented with God, without God. And why would people be willing, like the early believers of Jesus Christ, for example, why would they be willing to suffer death if there wasn't more to this, than just an emotional argument?
Exactly. And also, why would so many of the thinkers that everybody, atheists and believers alike, regard as among the great thinkers of history, again, thinkers of the stature of Leibniz or Thomas Aquinas or Aristotle or Plato, why would they hold that actual demonstrations or proofs of God's existence could be given through reason alone?
Mm-hmm.
if religion boils down to nothing but emotion. So,
exactly. Well, we want to get into more detail when we come back. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us, America, 15 minutes after the top of the hour. Five proofs of the existence of God. Edward Faser is with us, more from the Associate Professor of Philosophy at Pasadena City College in Pasadena, California.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-774-3149 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-774-3149. Again, that's 800-774-3149.
North Korea openly threatens the U.S. and launches a new missile every other week. Their warhead of choice? Electromagnetic pulse. Such an event would cripple the U.S. power grid for years and leave millions in the dark. Are you ready? You can be with a Solark EMP-hardened solar generator. Solark works day in and day out to keep your essentials protected. You can have peace of mind knowing your power will be there when you most need it. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to see EMP testing. That's PortableSolarLLC.com. Energy insurance for your family.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
You've heard the phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueHealthFacts.com. That's TrueHealthFacts.com. Then call 502-410-3411. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
Join us
online at BillMartinezLive.com.
Hey, whether it's online or any one of the 280-plus affiliates and markets that we come to you, or around the world in a short way, thank you so much for joining us. Our conversation with Edward Faeser continues. Edward is the Associate Professor of Philosophy at Pasadena City College in Pasadena, California. He's been a visiting assistant professor at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles and a visiting scholar at the Social Philosophy and Policy Center at Bowling Green State University in Bowling Green, Ohio. His latest book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God. Let's break it down. Proof number one, let's look at Aristotle. What did Aristotle have to say?
Yeah, let's see if I can break this down into like 30 seconds. I suppose 40 or 50 pages in the book, I'll give it a shot. So,
well, we'll Aristotle, give you more than 30 seconds. I mean, feel free. We'll take 45. What the heck?
Terrific. Yeah. So, you know, Aristotle starts from the fact that we find in the world that things are changing. You know, the air grows cooler when you have the air conditioning on, or, you know, your coffee grows cooler as you leave it out and so forth. And he analyzes change as something going from potential to actual. The coldness of the coffee is potential when the coffee is still hot, and it becomes actual as the surrounding air cools it down. And what he argues, and later followers of Aristotle like Thomas Aquinas argue, is that when we start asking questions like, how is it that anything like that ever happens? How is it that anything ever goes from potential to actual? And how is it that the fact that the coffee cup even exists here and now and doesn't just blink out? What actualizes that or keeps that in existence? We have to trace it to what Aristotle called an unmoved mover or unchangeable changer, or to use more technical language, you could say an unactualized actualizer. There's got to be something that actualizes things, keeps them going from moment to moment to moment, or they wouldn't exist at all. The world would blink out. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand that in this argument and all the other arguments I talk about in the book, the idea isn't simply that we trace the world back in time and get to a big bang and ask what caused that. What Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas and these other guys are saying is that what we need to do is trace the series of causes downward here and now to a kind of foundation or pedestal that holds it all up. And that's exactly what God is. He's the cause that keeps the world going, that's continuously causing it. Mm-hmm. And if he weren't doing so, it would blink out. It would fade out of existence.
Well, during my college days, the contemporary thought was there's no absolutes. If you say there's no absolutes, that takes God out of the equation immediately, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but of course a famous problem, and this is an objection that goes back to Plato, with the idea that there are no absolutes, is that the person who says that there's no absolute truth, you got to ask him, well, is what you just said an absolute truth or not?
Exactly.
And if he says that it is an absolute truth, then he's just contradicted himself.
Yeah.
And if he says, well, no, it's not an absolute truth, it's just my personal view, then I guess we could say to him, well, thank you for sharing, but why should the rest of us take that seriously?
Yeah, exactly. Why waste my time with this stuff? And now we get into a game of chess here. Let's go into the Neoplatonic proof, if we could. And you did pretty good on the first one, by the way. I want you to know.
Oh, thank you. The years of lecturing to students kind of helps you to refine things. So the second proof, which is called the Neoplatonic proof, is kind of a technical label. That means it, you know, derives from the school of thought going back to Plato, and it's represented by another ancient philosopher named Plotinus, is essentially the idea that things in the world of our experience are made up of parts of different sorts. Just take a trivial example, the way that the desk I'm sitting at here is made up of parts. There's the tabletop, there's the sides, the drawers, the door handles. The idea is that anything that's made up of parts in any way requires something that puts those parts together. Anything that's made up of parts anyway requires a cause of its own. And so for anything to exist at all, and anything to exist even here and now, we've got to trace it to a cause. And if that thing is made up of parts, in turn, to a cause of its own. But the buck has to stop somewhere, and the only way it can stop is with something that does not have any parts at all. It's something that exists in an absolutely simple or unified way. And that's another key aspect of the classical philosopher's understanding of God, that he's an absolute unity, absolutely simple or not made up of parts. Mm-hmm. And that when you unpack that idea, you find something that exists in a necessary way. It's outside time and space. It's not a material thing. All the traditional divine attributes. So that, in a nutshell, is the argument that goes back to Plotinus and the other Neoplatonic philosophers.
As complex as it may sound, it's very simple. And when you rest in that, you have this sense of peace in understanding it that way, I would think.
You do, insofar as arguments like this ultimately show us that the world is intelligible, meaning the mind can make sense of it. We can understand why things exist, why they exist in the way that they do exist. The world is not ultimately an irrational place. And the irony of this is that in traditional philosophy, in these writers, Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, Leibniz, their whole idea is that it's reason itself, it's the quest for ultimate explanation of why the world exists and is the way it is. That's what leads us to God. Mm-hmm. And to deny God's existence ultimately leaves you with a world that's not rational. We can't make sense of it. It's not intelligible. And it's paradoxical, to say the least, mm-hmm. that the people who take that position, that the world ultimately is something you can't make sense of, are the same people who claim to be more rational than believers in God.
Yeah, we end up going back to the book of Genesis, and we're in that that phase of chaos and darkness and confusion. Really, you know, you take God out of it, that's what you need to consider. I'm going to give everybody a program warning here. There's no way we're going to be able to get to all five proofs here, but that's a good reason why you need to get your hands on Edward Faser's new book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God. We've got about 3 minutes or so left here, Ed, and I want to address the Augustinian proof. And you're doing this as good as you can do, all things considered, to surmise this. But you know, like I said, it's good reason for people to get their hands on your book. So we'll tease them up a little bit, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
So Saint Augustine, his argument famously is to put it in a nutshell here, that there's certain truths that we know that are what philosophers call necessary truths. They could not be otherwise. Examples would be truths of arithmetic, that 1 and 1 makes 2, that 2 and 2 make 4, that 10 times 10 equals 100, say. Or of geometry, that the angles of a triangle add up to 180 degrees in Euclid's geometry anyway. So the idea is that these are truths that could not possibly change. They couldn't be otherwise. They always were true, always will be true. But as Augustine argues, there's no sense to be made of a truth that's not a truth entertained by some intellect, by some mind that grasps or understands the truth. So if we're talking about necessary truths, truths that are unchangeable, they always were, always will be true, and truth can exist only in an intellect, in a mind, then there must be an infinite mind or intellect that grasps these truths, an all-knowing intellect, namely a divine intellect. Mm-hmm. So that, in a nutshell, is Augustine's argument for God's existence, and that's spelled out in much more detail in the book as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then we go to the Thomistic proof.
Yeah, Thomas Aquinas is the proof for God's existence, which, in a nutshell, is that anything that has its existence in only in a derivative way, meaning it gets it from something else, has to have a cause. And if that thing which causes it has its existence only in a derivative way, then it would naturally have to have a cause as well. But once again, we've got a series of causes where the buck has to stop somewhere, and the only place it could stop is with something that has its existence in a built-in way. It doesn't have to get it from something else. It doesn't have to borrow it. Mm-hmm. It's a cause of existence which is not itself caused to have its existence, but has it in a built-in way.
Exactly.
And it keeps everything in existence at every moment, and that's what God is.
Well, we're going to be able to squeeze in the fifth one, but we need to hold to 45 seconds, the rationalistic proof.
Yeah, this goes back to the German philosopher Leibniz, the idea that the things of our experience are capable of either existing or not existing. They come into being and they pass away. The only way to explain how something like that can exist, though, is if we appeal to something that is not like that. It never comes into being or passes away, but it exists in an absolutely necessary way. It's a necessary being, and we unpack what it is for something to be that way, we'll find that it has all the divine attributes. It's all-powerful, all-knowing, outside time and space, etc., etc. So that's Leibniz's proof in a nutshell.
Edward Faser, you are a blessing. Thank you so much. Excellent book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God, available at all the usual places, and will be linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Ed, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
This report is brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Alliance. Many consumers do not fully understand how to protect their personal information online. They need to carefully consider the data they continuously generate about themselves and others from their mobile devices and PCs. Michael Kaiser with the National Cybersecurity Alliance.
Your personally identifiable information is like money. Value it, protect it. At staysafeonline.org, the National Cybersecurity Alliance offers free tips for keeping a clean PC and protecting your privacy online. For tips on how to protect your smartphone or tablet, check out DigitalU at onlinesafety.att.com. DigitalU is a program from our friends at AT&T that provides free tips and tools for protecting your devices and data, keeping your personal information secure, and keeping you safe online.
Protect your privacy online. Visit the National Cybersecurity Alliance at staysafeonline.org and AT&T Digital U at onlinesafety.att.com for more information.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $100, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, you should give Physicians Mutual Insurance Company a call. 1-800-496-1532. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away, so you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired or on Medicare. There are no networks, so you can choose any dentist you'd like. That's right, any dentist you want. Call and we'll rush you a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-496-1532. That's 1-800-496-1532. 1-800-496-1532.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
'60s philosophy music here, Moody Blues music, huh? I get lost in it sometimes, so forgive me, 27 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. Again, we're grateful for Edward Fazer coming on the show talking about the five proofs of the existence of God. I know some of this stuff is a bit heady, but look, if you want to go deeper, that's good. This is also why, in contrast, I appreciate, to me, one of the greatest testimonies that was written in the Bible was of the blind man who said, "Hey, I don't understand it either. I'm not sure I get it, but all I know is this is the way I was, and now I'm different. And, decide for yourself." And I guess that is proof in itself, and you could probably call that the sixth proof. I will take some liberty and add that to Edward's book. The sixth proof is you yourself for the existence of God himself. We've got with us a real treat. Salman Shinani joins us, known as the fairy tale expert. Now, Salman taught the world's foremost fairy tale, was taught by the world's foremost fairy tale scholar at Harvard, believe it or not. And to fast forward a bit, you may know the name from his series, The School for Good and Evil, that's now coming to a big screen near you. So, Salman Shinani, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, great to have you here to talk about The School for Good and Evil, the books themselves, 1.5 million copies sold into 24 languages across six continents, and Universal Pictures has snapped up the film rights. So, boy, this is quite the ride for you, huh?
It's been an amazing experience just because, you know, I think rarely do you, in life, you get to do what you're what you want to do and what you're good at, you know, and that intersection is hard to find. And so, you know, I've been very lucky to be able to do it.
Well, even to the point that when you went to school, I mean, you talk about being insistent on what was the rhyme and reason for your life. I mean, you basically defined your own major, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were not receptive at Harvard to the idea of studying fairy tales, really.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the concentration of your work for 4 years. But, you know, it was something that I was really passionate about as to why kids in our generation had to grow up with the Disney stories that are really sanitized versions of more sophisticated tales that the Grimm's brothers used to write and, you know, gave kids a more balanced and nuanced view of good and evil. Mm-hmm. And so Disney versions that often took those stories, tacked on a happy ending, and compromised the morals of them. And so that's what I wanted to do, is to get back to what fairy tales were supposed to be about and hopefully give kids a book that was a better moral compass for navigating the real world, you know, versus something artificial.
Yeah, and for you, being a Disney fan, I mean, you grew up, I guess, in a sense, a student, a consumer of the Disney product. You know, as you started to roll back, you know, that aspect, that maybe some of the stories had been sanitized. What did that make you feel like?
I mean, I think ultimately what you feel is that you have been sold something which is not true. And so you end up almost feeling like that culty, you know, feeling of having been brainwashed into believing in this myth of the princess myth, right? And you know, you look at the number of girls in America who grow up believing in it. It's quite staggering. That, you know, the boy's going to come rescue them. They wear pink. They buy into this idea of the castle and the happy ending and all these things. And I thought, why don't we start with that as a character, the girl who believes all this stuff, who bought into the princess myth, hook, line, and sinker, and that'll be our main character. And so that's ultimately what became the founding, you know, principle for the School for Good and Evil, was an attempt to reclaim these fairy tales from that very shallow view of what they were supposed to mean.
So this becomes, you know, in a sense, let's bring some clarity to what the Grimm brothers had intended. And let's kind of, right or wrong?
Yeah, because you have to remember, if you look at something like The Little Mermaid, which is written by Hans Christian Andersen, it's about a story about a girl who makes a lot of terrible choices. And at the end, she's trapped by those choices and ends up throwing herself into the sea and dying. Disney takes the exact same story, makes all the wrong choices, makes all the same terrible mistakes, and at the end she gets a prince and lives happily ever after, right? So it actually invalidates the moral and teaches kids the wrong lesson. And so I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen, that in my books there were consequences to your actions, and there was no such thing as a good character or an evil character. There was only what you did at any given moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if a kid is in a school for evil, that doesn't mean that they're a character you have to root against. If a kid is in the school for good, that does not mean that they're your hero. So
now, you know,
these are all things I wanted to deal with.
When, you know, I think about the School for Good and Evil, I mean, this is something that is kind of an opus for you, isn't it? I mean, this is a whole life's work, the concept, you know, as you're processing all these different influences and stories from your childhood.
and you're processing this through, I mean, you're like, I just have this sense that your whole life and being is poured into this.
Absolutely. I mean, I think these books are, it's so funny because when somebody likes something you do in life, you know, a piece of work, I think, you know, you're obviously flattered and things like that. But in this case, these books are very much like very personal. You know, they're an expression of what I believe about the world and what I think kids should be learning. And so, you know, when a kid likes it, to me, it feels like they're a kid who's asking the right questions. They're kids who want to see beyond being plugged into the matrix of sort of the shallow, you know, surface of the world. And so I always tell, when parents ask me, will my kid like it? I just tell them, if you have a kid who naturally asks questions, who's curious and wants to see beyond what you feed them, that are not passive consumers, this is their book, right? Yeah. Like, this is the one to give them.
Well, you know, there's something about being real and relevant, and I think that's what kids find out really quick, especially the ones that you might say are a bit precocious. And the ones that drive you nuts with that constant three-letter question, why, right? You know, and so...
because, you know, they're... Yeah.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I mean, I think that those kids are looking at the world in a deeper way than we are, right? They're on their own sort of, like, mini, like, constant 24/7, you know, acid trip where they're seeing beyond the limits of reality and asking, why is it constructed this way? Like, why, who made this rule? Like, why do I have, you know, and that's where I want them to experience the books, is in that sense of why are there rules? Why does this label exist? Like, you know, because I'm a girl, why do I have to do this? Why, because I'm a boy, why do I have to do this? So like all those sorts of questions I want them to ask and get answers to when they're reading the books.
Well, we're talking about the School for Good and Evil. Soman Shinani is our guest. He is the creator of it. And we're going to get into more detail. We've got about 14 minutes, less than that, actually, about 12 minutes that we'll have together to get into this deeper understanding of it. We know that the School for Good and Evil has sold, the series has sold more than 1.5 million copies, has been written in 24 languages across six continents, and Universal Pictures has snapped up the film rights, and so it's going to be coming to a theater near you. So more about the School for Good and Evil right here on Bill Martinez Live. Stay with us, 18 before the top of the hour right now.
There. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park or the beach or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-981-9347. 800-981-9347. That's 800-981-9347.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. According to a Bank of America survey, 3 out of 4 Americans plan to do some sort of back-to-school shopping this year. Jason Gaughan is with Bank of America.
As summer comes to a close, Americans are putting vacations behind them and spending on supplies for the classroom. Whether they're hitting the books themselves or picking up pencils for their kids, most plan to spend about $370 on back-to-school expenses. And while the next holiday break feels further than ever away, the right rewards credit card can let all that back-to-school spending get you one step closer to your next vacation. With the Bank of America Travel Rewards credit card, you can earn 1.5 points for every dollar you spend on purchases. Better yet, points don't expire, so you can redeem them when and where you want, including that next school break.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/travelconnected. That's bankofamerica.com/travelconnected.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-557-0158. That's 800-557-0158. Again, 800-557-0158.
You want to save money in a place that gives you growth, control, and certainty without stock market risk or tax risk, and you want guarantees and you want it all tax-free. That's a tall order. But you can get all of that with properly designed participating whole life insurance. Most people think life insurance pays after you're dead. That's true. But you can have tax-free access to use your life insurance while you're alive. Get the free book to find out how. Call 702-660-7000.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live. Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, we're back with you. 14 minutes before the top of the hour, our conversation with Soman Shinani continues. Soman, we know we mentioned that you graduated from Harvard. You basically created your own major. How did you locate the foremost fairy tale scholar at Harvard?
You know, it just happened that every freshman has to take a freshman seminar,
mm-hmm.
and I saw that she was teaching one, and it just called out to me, you know, mm-hmm. just given my experience with Disney stories growing up and my interest in them and my sort of obsession with fairy tale narratives. And mm-hmm. so I really worked hard to get in that class. She only took 10, and it was a highly competitive one. So, mm-hmm. you know, luckily the good thing is not that many boys want to take a fairy tale class.
Right, exactly. Well, it raises some suspicion, but from your roots, you know, growing up in Miami with all the hurricanes, and of course we were just talking about Mom and Dad and what they went through, and you're up in New York, so we're here on the East Coast, and we were able to experience the winds and the bluster, and it huffed and puffed, but it didn't blow everything down. We were very fortunate, and I guess your mom and dad were fortunate there in Miami where they were located too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up with the hurricanes, you get used to moving around, right? And
yeah.
you get used to sort of living in the evacuated situation. So, yeah, they had to run for it as usual. But no, they're back home now, and it sounds like everything's slowly getting back to normal. I'm going to be going down there on book tour pretty soon.
Oh, excellent.
To see some kids at my old middle school.
Well, your series so far has just had incredible success to the point that it's now coming to a theater near us, you got to be really excited about that. And then HarperCollins Publishers is going to, they said, hey, you gave us three great ones. We want three more, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more because I think we all assumed that after three I was done.
Mm-hmm.
I had three more in my head that I wanted to do in the future. And it just felt like with the way things were happening in the world and the story I was planning. It just felt like good timing to just do them right now. Mm. And, you know, that's what felt right. I wanted it to be like Star Wars, where there would be these, like, sets of trilogies. Mm-hmm. So it just felt like the right time to go straight into it.
Okay, so the next three, what are the titles?
The whole trilogy is called The Camelot Years. The first three are called The School Years, because mm-hmm. they're set in school, kind of like in a Harry Potter way. And the next three are more Game of Thrones, in that once the kids graduate from school, they go to their respective kingdoms, and you sort of have more of a kingdom rivalries and court romance and things like that. So the first book that comes out Tuesday is called Quest for Glory, and then books 5 and 6 are going to follow in the next 2 years.
Well, are you amazed that the way this has connected, not only with your audience, but, you know, to the point that it's published in all these other different languages and everything. That you just kind of want to pinch yourself sometimes, say, is this really happening to me?
I mean, I think I feel like a responsibility. Like, I think mm-hmm. some writers the pressure of, you know, just a lot of readers and the deadlines and everything makes them nervous, where for some reason it relaxes me, because it just means that it forces me to focus on the work. So mm-hmm. all I care about is doing the best possible work, you know. So my standards of what it has to be keep going up and up and up, which, you know, is hard, but it means that I don't really spend much time focused on, you know, where it is. I just want to keep going and make it better, you know.
Well, for you, this seems like this has been your purpose, and you knew this early on, and even going to Harvard and pursuing whether it was the ultimate fairy tale expert as an instructor. It just seems like you've been very well focused, and you know, which is very unique. I mean, you know, studies would say less than 10% of anybody realizes it. What it is that they're designed to do, and of course that leads to a rather happy and fulfilling experience. So for you, I'm sure this has been extremely fulfilling, because you're doing what you love to do.
Absolutely. And I mean, there were bumps along the way. I didn't come, you know, into the series straight out of college. You know, when you're trying to be an artist in the world, you have to take your lumps, you know. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of ups and downs, some years where I was the broke artist in New York trying to convince people I had a story to tell.
Right.
So, you know, you go through everything. But when you finally do hit it, if you stick with it, you believe in what you have to say, you know, eventually, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, you know.
And I guess that's the takeaway for others that, you know, are where you are. And wondering if that, you know, that dream that keeps you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, if that will ever be realized, right?
Absolutely. And I think, to me, it was about, okay, I got the chance to write these books. And so once I got the chance, then I put everything into them. I wasn't focused on, you know, how it was going to do. It was just about making the best possible product. So, you know, it's about waiting, you know, not necessarily waiting for your opportunity, but working hard to get your opportunity, and when you have it, you better be ready, you know. So that, mm-hmm. that's the way I thought about it.
Now, in the process of it all, as you walk through this, do you sense that, you know, the School for Good and Evil is kind of taken on a personality of its own?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fans have taken on their own, like, their own kind of life, and because the website is such an interactive experience. We have mm-hmm. an online video game. We have 18 forums for kids. There's over 400,000 kids on that site. You know, there's a YouTube channel. And so, like, it has its own life, you know, mm-hmm. like the books are just the beginning in a way. So, you know, my job also is as the sort of CEO of this school is to facilitate as much as I can for the kids to have their own experience of it.
Yeah, the sense of connectivity. I mean, you are what any brand would hope to become, is that you've engaged your audience and you're constantly reminding them of what it's all about with the website. Go ahead and give that website address. Since we brought it up, now's a good time.
SchoolForGoodAndEvil.com, and then that's where they should start. And then our YouTube channel, it's also on the website, but you can find it on YouTube. It's called Ever Never TV. And then, you know, I'm very active pretty much on Twitter and Instagram under my name. So you can find me at any of those.
Well, you know, for you and your experiences, as you say, is that it wasn't always rosy, but you invested a lot in developing your skill set. I mean, because not only Harvard, but you went to Columbia Film School as well.
Yeah, and I think I was interested in how to tell a story. So I was going to work really hard to learn the best way to tell a story, whether it was going to be books or film. And so all of those things fed into each other, for sure.
Well, in your background, as you say, you become, you know, quite the consumer and student of Disney films. And, you know, growing up there as a young child in Miami, as your bio says, you didn't have cable. So you really had a little bit more time to look into these things. So now you go through film school and with your background at Harvard as well. And you, in a sense, have to reorient the dots, don't you?
Yeah, I think, like, the world is constantly changing also. So it's about, you know, you might have a story to tell, but you have to be open to the stuff you're learning as you go along, the same way kids have to be. So that's why these characters are never fixed in the book. I want kids to understand that, like, you can learn things. Not the characters change. And so often books end once they've changed. But with the series, you can see them really grow. You can really see where they started to where they end up. So
what are some of the questions the kids ask you when you're talking to them about this series?
I think for them, you know, they always want to know, like, where ideas come from, of course, and that there is no answer. That's just, you know, it comes from your subconscious and your soul and your collective experiences. But I think they also, you know, they want to know, like, often how I decide what's going to happen to a character. You know what I mean? Like, how do I know what the path for a character is? And the real answer is you just experience the story the way they would, you know, and then often that takes them in a direction that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, have predicted. So it's about also telling kids that stories are alive and you have to really, like, feel it. You have to feel your way through it. You can't impose things on it.
Mm-hmm. So for the kids, what is the main takeaway on this series and the movie that will be coming out shortly that they will see in the School of Good and Evil?
I think it's that, you know, if you're a kid who finds most stories pretty predictable of what's going to happen, and, you know, you're so used to good always winning, and this is the series for you because it makes you push beyond those stereotypes, you know, and for parents who want to give their kids something that will blow up their minds a little and help them see something new, this is it, I think.
Yeah, and probably the parents want to come alongside and read the books with them because that way they can be, you know, a little bit more prepared for some of the questions that may come out as a result of the reading.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Sometimes, you know, some of the parents are our biggest fans, you know. So we've learned that parents often get hooked faster than the kids do.
Well, he's already given us three books in the series that have sold 1.5 million copies, The School for Good and Evil, been sold in 24 languages. We got three more books coming. Thank you very much, Harper Collins, and all the hard work of Soman Shinani. So we've got 4, 5, and 6 coming your way. And in between, or shortly thereafter, at a theater near you, we've got the movie. So it's been quite the ride for Soman Shinani. Soman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calben Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.